5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Radio Flash, Armada's dedicated defense and security electromagnetic podcast with your host Tom Withington at the controls. The US and her allies are embracing the multi-domain operations or MDO philosophy. MDO works to improve the pace and quality of decision making at the expense of one's adversary. The goal is to navigate the famed OODA loop at a faster clip than your enemy. Get MDO right and you'll always be proactive while your opponent is forced to be reactive. The Joint All Domain Command and Control Architecture, or JADC2, is the US Department of Defense's networking and computing project that will facilitate MDO. Broadly speaking, JADC2 will see the inter- and intra-force connection of all personnel, weapons, sensors, platforms, subsystems, and capabilities at all levels of war. The undertaking is ambitious. Some reports state that since 2022, the Pentagon has spent up to $2.6 billion on JADC2. A further $9 billion could be spent on the initiative before the end of the decade. But where is this money going and what is it delivering to US forces? Well, to make sense of these questions, we're delighted to be joined today by Leslie Hulser, Executive Vice President, Corporate Strategy at Persistent Systems. And Leslie joins us today from New Jersey. Leslie, it's great to have you with us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to speaking about this today with you.
I think we're going to have a good chat about JADC2 and in our own way try and demystify things a little bit. It's something that we're all talking about on both sides of the Atlantic, but I think getting into the nitty-gritty of what it all means is going to be quite interesting. And I suppose as a way of starting our discussion, from your perspective, basically where do things stand with JADC2 at present? And what does all this architecture sort of mean to you?
That's a great question. And as you stated, this is not a small task that the Department of Defense has set out on. So I appreciate you describing the acronym JADC2, Joint All Domain Command and Control. We've also heard it referred to as CJADC2. And I think folks would add, well, what does that C mean? It means combined. And the reason that that has been added is to clarify the inclusion of foreign forces. So it's not just one nation that's trying to communicate with another. It's potentially several all in the same operating field trying to communicate together. So the lofty goal of CJADC2 is to network the approach and network the combined battlefield and reduce the sensor to shooter link. There have been progress made by the DoD specifically, you know, in this objective, not only within the nation services, but trying to figure out how we work with our foreign forces. Some of the events that are happening now is, in addition to each of the DoD forces within the United States having set up cross-functional teams with an approach of delivering JADC2 within their services, they've now set up a guide office out of the Chief Digital AI office at the Pentagon that is doing these global information domination experiments to experiment with technology that could deliver this lofty goal that we have to perform in future operating environments.
Of course, it wouldn't be a DoD acronym without some growth of letters somewhere. I mean, it's we were talking just before we started the recording today about C4ISR. And I remember when I started in defense, it was just C2. And it's grown ever since then. And where will it all end? But the point you make, I think, about the coalition forces and combining the architecture is so important, because certainly on this side of the pond, you've got a lot of similar kind of JADC2 style efforts that are ongoing in France, they're ongoing in the United Kingdom, Germany is looking at this direction too. And that does beg the question, we're going to be fighting in future conflicts as coalitions in an allied fashion. So how do we make sure that our architecture can work with what the DoD is doing and vice versa. And it's really reassuring to hear that work is going on in that sphere. And sort of taking that, I suppose, as springboard into the next subject really is, from your perspective again, I mean, what, broadly speaking, has been achieved with JADC2 so far? What have been the key milestones that have been met?
So I think one of the recognitions is that no single service or unit or foreign country can do it on their own. And so really creating these collaborative teams that can work together and do some testing events that are operationally relevant in today's world is one massive step that has come forward. So the fact that from a U.S. perspective, this is at the Pentagon level shows that we're looking at it across all forces. You know, probably if you talk to me about 4 years ago when they implemented some of the cross-functional teams specifically in the Army, it was an Army networking cross-functional team. Now you see that that is working in coordination with this Pentagon CDAO office, and they're doing sprints. They're doing 90-day sprints where they're looking at different technology. One of the biggest changes that I've seen in the last year is that the CDAO office that's doing these guide experiments has expanded what they're looking at. You know, originally it was looking at really AI. How are we going to combine the data to give the soldier, the warfighter, the pilot, the information they need to make a decision? And so it was all about data and not as much talking about how you get the data there. And what I've seen in the last 6 months is that the recognition that the network needs to be at the center of the CJADC2 approach. So looking at it from an interoperability standpoint, when you show up in a country where you're working with partner forces, they are going to have different radios. They're going to have different platforms that you're integrating, different aerial platforms, ground platforms, and different radios on the soldier. And right now, if you were to look at that, you may have a ground force in a foreign nation that is operating on, you know, just a walkie-talkie. And perhaps they're operating in a non-native language of the force that's landed. So, you know, for example, you have an interpreter that is carrying a local radio for that unit that's operating, and they want to work with a U.S. force that just landed. And the interpreter is going to be operating on this one radio, receiving the message in a foreign language, translating that message to the ground commander that they're standing next to. That ground commander is then going to use a yet separate system to communicate to folks that have that same device in another language. That takes a lot of time, and it increases risk in terms of perhaps there's a misinterpretation of the information. So the idea of taking a network-centric approach is that if you can combine those two coalition partners on the same network, you can actually bring in the radio that the foreign forces are using with the unit that is on the ground and connect those things. And the future of this, when you get the AI involved, so once you create a network that can support all of these different platforms and different equipment that you're using, now you can introduce the AI that may allow an instant translation of the foreign language to the language of the force that's there. So there is a lot of progress in that there's a recognition that we need to work together to demonstrate and do these things, and also that it needs to be a network-centric approach because the amount of data that is going to be on the field is growing massively because it's coming from sensors in the air, on the ground, and from the soldier.
It is certainly fascinating to think about how all of these respective parts of how not just the US forces communicate, but allied forces communicate as well. And seeing how initiatives, for instance, like the Army, US Army's Integrated Tactical Network, which is a program I've been fascinated by for a long time, because it's got a genius in its simplicity. And it's sort of almost one of those things with, why didn't anyone think about this before? But this whole idea for our listeners, who, some of whom perhaps are not familiar with it, but effectively having an unclassified network that you can take with you, that you can have your tablet or your smartphone or whatever it is, and you can connect to that and you can get unclassed data over it. And that could be, you know, that could be imagery, that could be a map, that could be a written message, whatever it is. And you're good to rock and roll. You know, it's there, you connect into it, and it's ready to be used. And these are sort of, I think, very interesting visual parts of what the whole JADC2 thing means. You know, it isn't just the PowerPoints, as you've demonstrated, things are actually happening. This is physically, as much as we can talk about anything in the software domain being physical, but it is manifesting itself. And we're seeing these things that are making a difference. And clearly things are moving in the right direction. But that being said, I mean, nothing is sadly ever perfect in this world. And you know better than anyone else in military communications, things can rarely be perfect. But from your perspective, I mean, what are your concerns regarding where we go from here with JADC2 and its implementation?
Absolutely. And great question. Yeah, no easy task to do this. And there are some barriers that we feel, you know, that I see very clearly with the DoD, which I assume, you know, foreign partners and other military, forces are challenged with. So I see that we kind of have three major approaches or three major barriers to the approach right now. One is we have a spectrum problem, right? This all has to travel through, you know, radio frequency and there's limited spectrum that is usable in different areas depending on where you're operating. And also when you think about all of the items that you want operating in this area, it's a massive amount. So we have a spectrum allocation problem. We also have a budget challenge. You know, traditionally we've been budgeted to field, different capabilities within a certain program. And that program may be a ground vehicle program. Well, is that ground vehicle program funded to field an operationally relevant network that can support connecting it with aerial platforms and dismounted soldiers and unmanned surface vehicles? No, they haven't been, because that's a change that would have to happen. And we also have a requirement challenge. So what is the operational requirement? Again, it traditionally has been unit focused and not coalition or collaboration focused. And now what we're recognizing is that the data that one unit may have is very relevant to another unit that's operating. So how do we solve this? And again, and I think that we are making strides in this area, is we look at it from a network-centric approach. And if I can give you a basic example, we all have home internet and we've all had problems with it. So, one thing is when I was setting up my home network, I didn't set up one network for my printer and a separate one for my television and a separate one for my phone and a separate one for my computer. I identified my networking requirements and I went to my network provider and I said, I need this amount of bandwidth to do the business that I need to do out of my house. And perhaps I have children, so they have their devices. And I think that that's an important and very simple way to look at it, is we need to look at it from a network-centric approach. What is the volume and information that we want to be traveling across this network, and define it that way? And then when you define it that way, you start to think about, okay, well, what spectrum do I need? Do I need to limit these to really small channels so everybody's operating in silos? Or should I view it as a flat network approach where I'm putting all of the capabilities on a single network and dividing it by channels and talk groups versus dividing it by spectrum, which makes it much harder to combine? And the requirements challenge is real, because we've always viewed in silos in terms of how we deliver. Okay, I want to operate with an aerial platform, and that's great. So I have that connection with that aerial platform, but that aerial platform has a sensor on it, and that information may be useful to somebody that is on the ground. How do I shape requirements that can go through an acquisition process to where I am funded and allowed to purchase something that would communicate with other programs? So I really think it's three areas that are not super easy to change immediately, but we are making some advances in this area by creating these DoD level or cross-functional teams.
I think you make some excellent points there, Leslie, actually, because you got me thinking, I mean, on two strands. I mean, first of all, absolutely, the network compatibility problem in our own homes, as you mentioned, the frustration of the printer not connecting to the computer, which sounds a trivial thing, but of course you realize that's the problem when you've got to print your airline tickets off, or, you know, your boarding pass, as they are these days. And simply when we're going into theater and we're deploying, we don't have the luxury of time on that score. You know, things need to work, and they need to work properly pretty damn quick. But the other thing I think that's really interesting as we're having this conversation about JADC2 is that The nature of effects has changed hugely in such a short time as well. I mean, on the battlefield, where if we think back to relatively recently, the choices open certainly in the land domain and other domains as well, I guess. But in the land domain, for a commander is, you know, it's maneuver or it's artillery or it's calling in air. And you hope a combination of those, or calling in naval gunfire, whatever that might be, but you hope a combination of those effects will then have their desired outcome. Whereas now we're looking at integrating electronic warfare very much as an effect in its own right on the battlefield. We're bringing it out of the shadows. This week I've been doing some work on the cyber dimension, and one of the things that the Russians are looking at increasingly in Ukraine is, right, we've got a mission, we've got a target. Do we want to affect that target kinetically? Do we want to affect it electronically, cybernetically? Do we want to do all three? And the challenge that then brings is that your effector might not be part of your own force. You know, it might be somewhere else. Are they using the same data standard that you're using? Can you easily share that information? So in a sense, I think as we get more effects, we get more networking challenges as well, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, you couldn't describe it better. You know, there are all these complicated things that are working together. And if we don't have the information that we need going across the network, then we're not going to be as effective. And there's areas where, you know, there's a lot of theaters going on right now that are pointing us towards looking at what is the next theater that this is going to be very important in. And I think that most people would argue that that's going to be the Indo-Pacific region. You know, that is really where we're looking towards. How are we ensuring that we have this capability, this CJADC2, to allow us to operate together? And I think there are some experiments that have been taking place to prepare us for this that show exactly what you're talking about. There was an experiment or an event that took place called Valiant Shield in July of 2024. And what this is it's a multinational, multi-service, multi-domain exercise. They're connecting the air, space, land, and maritime assets. It was over 200 ships, aircraft, and ground vehicles, in addition to thousands of military personnel from different nations. It operated from Hawaii to Palau to the Philippines to Guam. And what was it doing? It was connecting that data. It was making sure that, you know, we have the network to deliver the data to where it needs to be. It's closing that sensor to shooter link. It's understanding what EW environments we have that are happening in the different areas and how are we working around that. It's hard to work around EW threats when you are operating in a point-to-point link. When you have a network that can heal around those, you know, kind of challenges, then you can operate around it. But that is only delivered when you have an operationally relevant network that can network a large area and do a large flat network that's interoperable.
Well, Leslie, something tells me that we're going to be revisiting JADC2 on a relatively regular basis. So please do come back and chat to us again. Let's take stock of where we are. Perhaps in a year's time, 6 months' time, this is going to be something that absolutely keeps evolving and I think will continue to be of great interest to our listeners. So it just remains for me to say thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
And if you'd like to learn more about JADC2, then the US Department of Defense website, that's www.defense.gov, should emphasize US spelling of defense there rather than the English one. But it's got some excellent resources and is well worth a visit. And there's also some great commentary out there from the US think tank world as well that's definitely worth looking at. So I would very much advise that you head over to those websites and take a look if you'd like to learn more. But don't forget that there's more defense and security news and analysis at armadainternational.com. But alas, that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening.